Rick Stevens, financial advisor with FRS Financial Group. Securities and advisory services offered through LPL Financial, a registered investment advisor, member FINRA SIPC. The opinions voiced in this program are for general information only and are not intended to provide specific advice or recommendations for any individual. To determine which strategies or investments may be suitable for you, consult the appropriate qualified professional prior to making a decision. For more detailed information regarding any of the topics discussed on today's show, please call 719-500-8700. This is Money Matters, presented by FRS Financial. Here's your host, Rick Stevens.
Welcome in, ladies and gentlemen, to this edition of Money Matters, presented by FRS Financial Group. I am your host, Rick Stevens. With me, as always, each and every week, we've got Andrew Rogers in studio with us. Andrew, it's a beautiful day in somebody's neighborhood.
Yeah, it just depends on who.
Exactly. And what kind of temperature we're looking for, right?
Yeah.
So, well, folks, this week on Money Matters, Ben Fisk with Fisk Lawns is here with us in studio. We're going to be talking about all those wonderful, wonderful landscaping things that folks could have going on, Ben.
That's right. Also live in studio with you this morning, Rick.
Yes, indeed. Yes, indeed. Well, folks, if you've got questions that you would like to have answered, if you've got a topic you'd like to have us cover on a future episode of Money Matters, feel free to give me a call at 719-500-8700. You can also send me an email, rstevens@frsfinancialgroup.com, or simply go to our website, frsfinancialgroup.com. Click that contact tab, send us that question, send us maybe that topic you want to hear more about. We would love to hear from you. So, folks, we do have Ben with us here from Fisk Lawnscapes. I do have to give that official disclaimer to make the powers that be happy. So LPL Financial and FRS Financial Group do not endorse the guests appearing on Money Matters, because endorsing them would be against what FINRA allows us to do. Yeah. But, Ben, we're glad you're here anyway. Ben, we've seen a what I would call maybe a not-so-typical summer in southern Colorado along the Front Range here. My grass, Ben, by the time this thing airs, we are in September and my grass is still green.
That's right. Lots of rain and lots of hail. Have you ever seen so much hail in a summer?
Well, maybe a couple years ago, if we're looking by volume.
That's right. We've had, man, multiple storm after storm. I saw some storm tracks of hail that's hit Colorado Springs this year, and I think everybody's gotten some this year.
Yeah, we got a lot at my house, but it was mostly the small pebble-sized stuff at my place. But I know folks up and down the entire Front Range have gotten that, you know, golf ball. Some folks, I've even seen some of the baseball-sized stuff that have landed. And I'm going to guess here that there are probably some folks out there, Ben, that have some damage to things from the hail.
Absolutely, yeah. It's a common question we have gotten here this summer with all the hailstorms that have rolled through. And, you know, there's certainly been damage, right, to roofs and siding and gutters. But we have seen a lot of damage to a lot of the planted material, a lot of your trees, a lot of your shrubs, perennials. And so the question that we get asked all the time is, hey, what do I do with my hail damaged plants? Are they dead? Are they going to survive? And the simple answer is, yes, they will survive. they will be okay. They do look a little bit shredded after a hailstorm. But hopefully now, as it's maybe been a few weeks or a month or two since you've seen hail, you start to see some of those leaf structures looking a little bit better. A lot of them are still damaged and bruised when you look close at them. But the integrity of the plant generally is just fine. So you don't need to rip that plant out. You don't need to go down to the nursery and buy a new one. It simply is going to be damaged for the rest of this year. And then as we move into next year, when it puts on all the new growth and new leaves, then you'll kind of have a fresh start again next year to hopefully get some nice blooms. But in general, those plants are going to be just fine. Give them a little extra TLC. Some people also ask the question, do I need to do any extra maintenance to them? You can certainly prune off some of the really damaged limbs or damaged leaves. You can certainly prune those off. But for the most part, there's not a whole lot that you need to do with those hail damaged plants.
Well, it's good to know that, especially if I planted something earlier this spring.
Yes.
And it was starting to look good. And then, June hit, mm-hmm. and you know, we were seeing, I don't know exactly how it all tracked at your house, Andrew, mm-hmm. but at my house, I swear, it felt like for probably 5 or 6 weeks, every other day, we were getting hail at my house.
And then the other days, we were getting just torrential downpour rain
yes.
in the mixture of it.
And we even got hail at my house, and my plants got shredded, and as well as my roof and siding, all sorts of stuff. And out in Black Forest, we got some significant hail as well.
So let me ask this, because Andrew, you talked here just a moment, right, about that a little bit of rain that we got
yeah.
this year.
Yeah, maybe a couple records smashed.
And I think, Ben, earlier this summer, I believe I saw something that you had put out there on your Facebook site that the month of June, we got the same amount of rain that we normally get in a year.
That's right. Over the course of about 6 weeks, we got our annual rainfall total for Colorado Springs. And so we've already smashed that record for the year. And anything that we get now is just above and beyond that. So very, very wet year. And, you know, we've seen a lot of, you know, things that we generally don't see in Colorado Springs because we do live in a high altitude desert. You know, we've seen some issues and problems in our landscapes this year that you generally don't see.
Yeah, I know I've seen a lot more moss than I would expect as well, too. And it seems, I don't know if it's just this year or if maybe I just haven't been the best outside homeowner, but it just seems like the weeds have been much more prevalent
oh,
this year.
Boy.
And even like those small little like viney, like low-lying ones, not even like the big tall guys.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, lots more weeds now that we've seen over the last month as it has dried up a little bit and that sunshine has come out and we've had some of that hot weather once again. You're definitely seeing a lot of weeds in those rock beds. So you can you know, pull those, and that's a great way to get rid of them, but you can also spray. This is also you know, where you want to make sure you have a good weed barrier fabric down underneath your rock areas, Andrew. And if you're seeing some moss areas, if we can touch on that for just a second, oftentimes you see those moss areas because you don't have proper drainage away from that area. So mm-hmm. if you have an area that's continually mossy, it's probably because it's pretty flat and it doesn't have a lot of slope kind of moving away from the house or away from the foundation. And you often will see that on the north side of homes as well, for that same reason, as you don't get as much sun over there. So those areas stay wet, and that's what allows that moss to grow.
Yeah, and with that too, you know, we know a lot of people have chosen the landscaping that we've had here because we are that kind of high arid desert. So finding different grasses that work for what's traditionally more drought-esque conditions, the same with other plants. But noting that we went halfway through the year, already getting our year's worth of rain before we get some of those, you know, fall snow, some of that wet stuff. Is there anything we should be concerned about with that grass growth or, you know, maybe the long-term sustainability of our plants, knowing that this is more generated for maybe not as much moisture as we've seen this year?
Sure. Yeah, absolutely. We have seen a couple of various conditions, but first, just to touch on some of the ornamental grasses that do well in a drought environment. They generally will do well with extra water as well. And so a lot of the plants that we plant, if they get extra water, we're not going to kill them. We're simply you know, giving them more water than what they need. So some of the things that you might notice with some of your plants is that your blooming cycle is lasting longer this year, whether it be your Russian sages or your potentillas. You're seeing those more vibrant colors potentially, and you might be seeing those bloom a little bit longer now with that sunshine as it's drying out. Now the plants are getting all that sunshine that they really, really like and need to really bloom. And so they got a lot of water, so putting on a lot of growth, and now a lot of those kind of summer and early fall bloomers are doing really well because they're putting out a lot of those vibrant blooms.
And let me ask you this, because I don't know if this is just something that my head makes sense to me, but I'm not a landscaper, I'm not a horticulturist, just a guy who talks on the radio. But knowing this, knowing that these are still, you know, living organisms and, you know, kind of living plants, is that going to change what we need to do watering for the next couple years, knowing that they got so accustomed to a heavy dose of water this year? Are we going to have to maybe retrain some of these plants and lawns for years to come to get back to more of what's a traditional normal?
Sure, yeah, great question. Again, these are drought-tolerant plants, and so the short answer is no. You're not going to need to change your watering needs as we move into next year. It still is going to be important that you do your winter watering over the winter, but as we move into spring and summer next year, kind of returning those to the kind of your normal watering schedule should be just fine for those.
So Andrew, what that means in our language, in normal guy language, mm-hmm. is that we don't have to retrain the plants like we have to retrain our kids sometimes.
I mean, if we could get to the part about just training the kids, then we can worry about retraining.
That's true. That's very true. Now, Ben, I know we've had, and we've talked here, a lot of extra moisture this year. But one of the things that I see going through, you know, my neighborhood in particular, and, you know, I've kind of paid more attention there because I figure whatever happens in my neighborhood eventually ends up at my house, is there are some trees that aren't looking so good. Whether that's the leaves on those deciduous trees are already turning yellow. I've seen some different pines that are actually brown already, and I'm thinking, haven't we had enough water? What is wrong with these things?
Yeah, there could be a couple of things wrong with your trees this year. We're definitely seeing some tree impact. We talked about the hail, and that's one thing, is that you could have a bunch of leaves that are damaged, and so those trees aren't looking the best. But we're also seeing a lot of fire blight in quite a few neighborhoods throughout Colorado Springs. And fire blight essentially looks like you may have a branch or two that kind of turns brown and leaves kind of crinkle up a little bit. And it's a very infectious disease. And so it generally impacts your apple trees, your crab apples. Sometimes if you have a pear tree, it can impact a few other species as well. But it definitely the crab apples, we're seeing a lot of that around town. And really, really important as you address your fire blight, because it's so infectious, you do need to prune it out of there, but you have to prune it out the right way. And kind of what I mean by that is between every branch that you cut, you actually have to disinfect your pruning shears. And the reason for that is if you cut the branch that has the fire blight, your shears now is carrying the fire blight onto the next branch that you touch. So really, really important that you disinfect on every cut for that fire blight. You could certainly get a qualified arborist out there to take care of that for you. But it is an issue that has cropped up a lot more this year because of all that rain that we've had. And so we've seen fire blight, which a lot of folks in town maybe have never seen fire blight on their trees. And now all over town, we're seeing it, you know, from Monument to Briargate to downtown to the east side and Rockrim and all over. So definitely something, if you have one of your trees, especially again in that crabapple family, if you see something that looks a little bit off, you potentially could have some of that fire blight going on.
And especially if you have those pear trees, you got to make sure you're disinfecting the partridges that come around as well, too.
It's not even Christmas yet.
Well, yeah, thinking about, you know, some of these things and that trimming, even the cutting of some of those trees, because I know there are folks, it's El Paso County. There are pine beetles, right? We see beetle kill in different places. We've got to hopefully take down the trees that are dead. We don't want them just fall over on something. So if I've got some stuff in my yard that may or may not need trimmed, whether that's, you know, I've got too many of the low-hanging branches and I need to kind of raise up the bottom of that a little bit, or I've got a tree that I just flat out need to cut, when is the best time of year to actually do that trimming and that cutting?
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, you mentioned pine beetle, and Ips beetle is another one out there. Those beetles are most active during the summer months. And so once we get to the winter months, that's the best time to trim those pine trees. And the reason for that is that those beetles are just not very active. And so if you do have some pine beetle on your property, maybe you live in Black Forest, maybe you live in Monument and you have some pine beetle, or maybe you have Ips beetle. We see quite a bit of Ips around in Black Forest as well. You don't really want to start messing with your trees until the off season, what we call the off season. So kind of those winter months. And really you want to wait until the overnight temperatures are down below the 32 degrees. And that really slows those beetles down. And so that way you're not, you know, spreading the beetle from one part of your property to another part of your property. So the correct time to prune your pine trees is going to be kind of your November through March timeframe. Also important, as we've touched on before, is to trim if you have, say, some blue spruces or some Austrian pines and you have some branches that are touching the ground. You want to prune those bottom branches off of the ground so they're not actually touching the ground. You don't have to get them off the ground by a whole lot, but that can also really help any kind of beetles or infestation that comes into your tree by just getting those a few inches off of the ground level. And that really, really can help, again, with the health of that tree.
Awesome. Now we touched a little bit here on that beetle issue, right? If we've got the Ips beetle or the pine beetle, is there anything we can actually do to either, A, if we figured out there's some sort of an infestation in our trees, or to maybe even stave off them from, you know, coming around the house. Is there anything we can actually do to help with that sort of thing?
Yeah, absolutely. So if you do have, say, a couple of trees that have a lot of beetle in them, and the tree is over really about half dead, you want to get that tree out of there. It's going to be hard to save that tree. If you have a light infestation, you can handle some of that with some different sprays. And again, that's where you can contact an arborist, a tree spraying company. Those are not services that we provide as a company, but certainly, you know, there are companies out there that can spray those trees and really help with some of those infestations of those Ips and pine beetle.
Awesome. Now I'm going to stay on the trees for just a quick moment here, because I know you guys aren't arborists, but years ago, when we first moved out here, one of the things that we were told was, because we had ponderosa pine everywhere, was that you wanted to basically trim the branches off basically to your own head level. Is that because of the tree, or is that for mowing under the tree and I don't get hit with the branch in the head?
Yeah, I mean, it depends on the look that you're going for. You know, a lot of the ponderosas, you do want to trim up off the ground for a couple of different reasons. One of the biggest ones actually is fire mitigation. You get those branches up off the ground and you have a ground fire that comes through. It's not getting up into the crown of your tree. Certainly for mowing underneath, playing underneath, and just as those trees mature, those bottom branches tend to die on a ponderosa anyways. And so kind of cutting those up can get those dead branches off of there. But you may have an Austrian pine, or you may have a Colorado blue spruce, or any of the varieties of spruce out there. And you don't necessarily want to trim those the same way, because then I think they look kind of funny. And so, again, depending on what you're going for in your yard from a look perspective, and then, you know, do you have grass underneath it and you need to mow underneath it, or is it something that you can let be pretty close to ground level?
Well, and again, too, depending on, you know, where your head rests as well. It might look okay, like, for Rick's height, but getting to, like, Ben and I, that's just really weird.
There's your height. There's a plus to being under 6 feet tall.
Yeah.
Well, folks, we are up against that first break in today's show. When we come back, we are going to continue talking with Ben Fisk, the owner at Fisk Lawnscapes, about any and everything landscape. So stick around. We will be right back.
Does stock market volatility have you wondering which way is up? Do the talking heads and doomsayers have you wondering if this really is the end? If you want straight answers from an advisor who isn't just trying to sell you something, call FRS Financial Group at 719-500-8700 to schedule your complimentary appointment today. And remember to tune into Money Matters presented by FRS Financial Group here on KRDO, Saturday mornings at 9 and Sunday at noon. Products and services offered through LPL Financial, member FINRA, SIPC.
Welcome back to Money Matters, presented by FRS Financial Group. I'm Andrew Rogers, along with Rick Stevens. We're joined in studio by Ben Fisk of Fisk Lawnscapes. Ben, we're airing this, we're in the Labor Day holiday weekend, and I know there's a lot of times where you kind of use those long holiday weekends or those summer holidays, whether it be Memorial Day, Labor Day, 4th of July as such, is kind of a maybe a marker as far as what we should be doing out on our lawn. So as we're looking at this unofficial end of summer, what should we be doing getting our lawns either still going well or maybe getting ready for the upcoming fall that's going to come quicker than we want?
Absolutely. First thing, Andrew, get out and enjoy your yard. Labor Day weekend is the weekend to enjoy your yard. You've put a ton of work in for Memorial Day to July 4th. It's a great opportunity to sit back and just really enjoy what you know. If you got some perennials out there that should be blooming nice, you know, break out the barbecue. So first thing is definitely enjoy it. Now, in terms of some actual work in your yard, this is a good opportunity to go ahead and take a look at fertilizing. If you haven't fertilized in the last 6 weeks, not a bad opportunity to do that. You can also start looking at your plans for the winter. So if you haven't put down any mulch in the last year or two, this could be a good opportunity to remulch your yard. And that's kind of preparing those plants as we move into the cooler weather over the next couple of weeks. You can also start thinking about things like turning off your sprinklers. Don't turn them off yet, but
just
you
think
can
about
start
it.
Thinking
think
about it. Yes. That's right. Because September is generally, you know, It's a great month for landscaping. It's a great month to still enjoy your yard. So we don't need to turn those off until we get into the October timeframe. But you can definitely start thinking about that. You can also, you know, if you do a fall aeration, which we recommend, you can get that fall aeration and fertilization scheduled. So that's something that you can think about as well. And then, you know, one other thing that we always like to recommend kind of in this early September timeframe is it's a great opportunity to plant. Okay. So if you are out enjoying your yard this weekend and you're like, hey, what do I need to do out here? And you identify some places where you want to add some color. You want to add a tree or two. You want to add some shrubs. You need to do some screening from the neighbor's barking dog. Whatever the case may be, great opportunity to kind of plan what you want to do and then go down to the nursery here over the next couple weeks and get those plants in the ground.
Yeah, and speaking of planning, let me ask this. And this is maybe, you know, asking for a friend. Maybe they've had just that spot in the yard. That they've tried, you know, raking through, reseeding, getting stuff down, trying to get that to come out, and it still hasn't. Is it too late to try and maybe get some sod down, or is that something that probably should get pushed off to next spring?
Yeah, you still have time to do sod, hypothetically speaking, for your friend there, Andrew. You're welcome to, you know, potentially cut that area out. And I would recommend, you know, if you have an area that's struggling, it really could be soil related. So my recommendation would be to go ahead and cut that area out, remove maybe 2, 3, 4 inches of the soil, and then bring in some really good, like a planter's mix, a topsoil mix that's going to have some organics and some topsoil in there. Go ahead and spread that out, then put your sod down. And then the trick on that sod is going to be to water it for the next 3 to 4 weeks. And so because we still have the irrigation systems on, and if we do that in early September, you should have plenty of time to still water that sod in to allow it to root over the next 3 to 4 weeks before we start talking about turning off the irrigation. Mm-hmm.
And one of those things, Ben, you were talking here a little bit ago about, you know, if you haven't fertilized in the last 6 weeks, doing that fall fertilization, even looking ahead further down the road to that. There's a particular company that calls it the winterizer fertilizer in there. But I'm going to guess that there might be a few listeners that are like me. They didn't use all of their spring fertilizer on their yard. What should we not be putting on the yard in the fall that we did put on it in the spring?
Yeah, so your spring fertilizer, Rick, is designed for the spring. So you do not want to just pull out that leftover bag you have in the garage there. You know, a fall fertilizer, it's actually going to be made up of some different nutrients for your yard. And so it's going to be a lot more balanced from the different numbers that are on that bag. And a spring fertilizer is going to be super high in nitrogen because that's really going to kickstart a lot of the green, a lot of the growth. And a balanced fertilizer is going to have way less nitrogen in there, and it's going to have a few of the things in there to really help promote your root growth and to promote kind of the blade of that grass and the root of that grass to start to store energy for next spring. And so definitely recommend more of a fall or a winter fertilizer at this point, and that will definitely help your yard out versus just pulling out your leftovers.
All right. Apparently, Andrew, I have to go buy fall fertilizer.
Well, and apparently a friend of mine may have to go get a couple rolls of sod as well. some soil as well. But with that, you know, kind of looking at the lawn, knowing that we're almost in that kind of shoulder-y area, not full, you know, heat of summer, but not yet fall, should we be looking at the height of our mowers as we're still mowing, or are we still good to kind of stay where we've been at? What should we be doing?
Yeah, you should basically kind of keep it where you've had it at, and kind of that 3 to 4 inch range. We often recommend about 3.5, 3.25, something like that, depending on your specific yard. But yeah, kind of keep it at that point. As we move kind of into the fall timeframe, as we get in October and you start, you know, picking up some of those different leaves and whatnot, you can drop the mower a little bit. And then we recommend on your final mowing of the season, and this may not be until Thanksgiving, your final mow of the season, to go ahead and drop it down to 3 inches or even 2.75, and to kind of pick up any of that dead thatch and leaves and any of that other debris on your final kind of fall mowing, if you will.
I'm going to put that on the calendar that Ben said, final mowing of the season around Thanksgiving, because Andrew, I have a kid that'll be back for Thanksgiving that I think I should just make
Perfect.
Him go mow the lawn.
Perfect.
Right?
Well, I'll send you the address. I may or may not be on vacation over Thanksgiving, so I'll just send you the address, have him head over to our place too.
All right, we'll do that. Now, before we kind of jump totally out of the fall, I know you talked, Ben, about it is still a good time to be able to plant those different things. Are there certain particular, whether it's trees, shrubs, ornamentals, any of that stuff, that we need to actually avoid planting in the fall? Is there anything that the fall is not a good time, or is it actually pretty much fine across the boards?
Yeah, you know, for the most part, the things that you're going to buy at a local nursery, you know, you can pretty much plant everything year round. You may want to avoid some of your annuals. You can still get annuals at Home Depot, Lowe's, those places. And an annual is something that's going to die when the weather gets cold.
Right,
so at this
right.
point, you know, if you go buy an annual, you will get a couple months out of it. But something that you may want to think about before investing lots of money into annuals, it's kind of the wrong time of year to plant annuals. Now, that being said, I actually just did some containers at my house, and I put a bunch of mums, chrysanthemums, in there. Beautiful fall color. And so, you know, investing in something like that will give you a couple months of that fall color. You know, you oftentimes see those planted in various places around the springs in the fall, you know, your pumpkins, and, you know, we're moving into kind
right.
of that season of fall. So, you know, that might be a nice thing to do here over the Labor Day weekend as well, is kind of do some of your fall planters with that. But yeah, in general, you know, you can really plant everything year round, a lot of your perennials and trees and shrubs. You know, some people actually say the best time of year even to plant your trees is in the fall, because those, you know, the trees are getting ready to go dormant and they're storing up energy, and then they pop out really nice for you the next spring. And so, again, September is probably one of my favorite months to landscape, and it's a great month to plant.
Awesome. Well, folks, we are up against another break in today's show. When we come back, we're going to talk maybe some future landscaping plans with Ben Fisk, owner at Fisk Lawnscapes. So stick around. We will be right back.
Money affects each of us in different ways. Sometimes it's a source of stress and fear. Sometimes it's a source of comfort and security. Whatever your perspective, it's always good to get a second set of eyes on your finances to help serve as a guide. If you are looking for that guidance, call FRS Financial Group at 719-500-8700 to schedule your complimentary appointment. And remember to tune into Money Matters presented by FRS Financial Group here on KRDO, Saturday mornings at 9 and Sunday at noon. Products and services offered through LPL Financial, member FINRA SIPC.
Well, folks, thanks for sticking with us through that break right here on Money Matters. Rick Stevens, your host, along with Andrew Rogers, in studio with us, Ben Fisk of Fisk Lawnscapes. And Ben, believe it or not, I've paid attention to the Farmer's Almanac. And, oh, okay. I know this is going to be a great answer because he's already laughing at me, Andrew.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I know the Farmer's Almanac isn't perfect. It sometimes get things wrong, but one of the things that it has said about Colorado in particular, you know, the Mountain West region, if you will, basically it's Colorado, maybe a little bit of Kansas, Nebraska, Wyoming, is that we need to be ready for colder temperatures, a little colder than normal, but maybe not necessarily any more snow than normal through our winter months. But if it's going to be a colder than normal winter, is there anything special that I need to be doing for those plants, for those shrubs that are my perennials, to kind of protect them through any of that?
Well, you know, this is Colorado Springs, and so oftentimes the meteorologists also have a hard time getting it right. So, you know, Farmer's Almanac, meteorology, you yeah. know, we all can take our best guess, I suppose, at it. But yeah, you know, in terms of what we are looking at for the winter, one interesting thing to note is that it is looking to shape up as an El Niño winter. And so kind of what that means for us historically from a Farmer's Almanac perspective, or even a, you know, climatology perspective, is that we will get a little bit more snow than we generally get. And potentially it could be a little bit cooler, but sometimes El Niño means that it's going to be warmer plus more moisture that comes through. So, you know, in terms of kind of what the impact is for your landscape, you know, the winter watering piece is always really important to touch on. Whether it's a dry winter or a wet winter, you still need to put water on your landscape. And so I always just really like to stress that point. So really 1 to 2 times per month when the temperature is 40 degrees or greater, You want to drag a hose around, soak those trees, soak the perennials, soak your yard, you know, take out your sprinkler that's buried in your garage and pull that out. And then when you're done, be sure and unscrew that hose from the hose bib, drag it all back into your garage so it doesn't freeze and you can use it again, a few weeks down the road. Now, if we're getting more snow and rain and sleet and all the things that we get in the winter, that will help with some of that winter watering. But we also can get some of those really long dry stretches. And man, I tell you, just year after year, I see folks who do that and their yards come back really nice. And I see folks who don't do any winter watering and you will have winter kill. You'll have winter kill in your sod. You'll have some trees that die. You'll have some perennials that die. So just can't stress the importance of winter watering enough as we talk about this idea of, hey, how wet or dry is it going to be this winter? And also a couple of interesting weather stats since we're on the topic of weather. Just saw this come out yesterday and or a couple days ago. And in Colorado Springs, the average high and low temperature on September 1st is 81 degrees for the high and 54 for the low. And that cools down to 72 degrees by the end of the month for your average high, dropping down to 43 degrees for the low. And so we have just a really nice average fall when we get that, you know, fall weather here. The average high of 81 down to 72 sounds pretty nice.
It does. It almost sounds like good football watching weather.
Yeah, very much so.
Of course, as a Bears fan, I don't know much about good football, let alone good football watching weather.
One of these years.
Hopefully.
But
the Cubs won in my lifetime. Maybe the Bears will be good again.
Yeah, maybe.
Maybe next year.
Maybe next year. Maybe.
It depends.
Who knows? It does depend.
Well, here's the, you know, one question with that. You know, you'd mentioned kind of that change in temperatures. This is also the time, too, where we start to get some of those more wild swings where we could still have our daytime temperatures in the, you know, upper 50s, 60s, maybe even, grazing into the 70s. But soon enough, we're starting to get down to the 30s at night. So how do we really know it's time to go from that underground, you know, irrigation system to the above ground, plug it in like we would for our winter weather, knowing that it's going to be really a tale of two situations just depending on the day?
Mm-hmm, absolutely. I think it was a couple years ago, 3-4 years ago, we had 80 degrees registered as the high. And then that night it dropped all the way down to, I believe it was like 20, 21 degrees, something like that. We had a 50 degree temperature drop in less than 12 hours. That has really significant impacts on plants. In fact, you know, we saw a lot of plant damage the following year from a drop like that. And so when you have those extremes, the best thing you can do is protect your plants the best that you absolutely can. And this is where, you know, we talked about remulching a few minutes ago. Really put as much mulch around those plants as you can. That really helps kind of insulate the plant, and that works really well. Not a whole lot you could do with your trees, but certainly if everything is well watered, that actually can help your tree do well as well. The challenge is while we're still in September, the tree is not ready for those really crazy temperature swings. Once we get into December, that tree is now dormant, and so it's able to handle a lot of that wild weather a little bit better. But those are a couple little things that you can do in your yard to kind of help prepare for that. And then certainly from an irrigation perspective, anytime you get below 32 degrees, so if we do get a crazy temperature swing, which can happen in September, definitely make sure that you perform the quick drain on your system. And that is pretty easy to do, but you can look up videos on YouTube on how to do that. Anytime it gets below 32 degrees, be sure and perform that quick drain on your system.
And so what I'm hearing here is that we shouldn't do what they do in Florida when they get that unexpected cold snap and actually cover everything in ice. That's not exactly what we should be doing.
No, covering everything in ice doesn't work super well. Yeah.
Before we kind of jump to the next piece here, one more thing I want to kind of ask a little bit about that dormant versus the winter kill, especially when we're looking at our lawns. How can I tell that my grass is dormant versus it died over the winter because I didn't actually water it properly?
Well, the best way to tell is to wait till next spring. And whatever greens up didn't die. In general, you know, the winter kill and the dormancy does look really similar in the off season. And so really it does take until spring when that grass starts to pop. If you look really close, even as early as like the end of February, and you look really closely, you can actually start to see green shoots coming up in your yard. And so if you have an area that you don't see any of that, That's kind of your first tip of like, we might have some winter kill here. You'll also tend to get a lot more winter kill on areas that are south-facing and west-facing because of all the sun that it's getting over the winter months. And if you have an area that is constantly traveled on. So if you have, you know, the front yard and you always park in the same spot and then everybody cuts across the grass in the same spot, those areas, because it's receiving high traffic during the winter months, are a lot more susceptible to that winter kill as well. So some ways to mitigate that, certainly don't walk, you know, in the same place every time. If you can prevent some of the compaction and traffic, that can help. And then certainly give those areas more winter water as well. So if you had some issues that have had winter kill in years past, you know, maybe the area, Andrew, that we were referencing earlier that's been struggling to come back for you, that area you want to give a little extra TLC to in the off season. So a little extra water, try to keep the kids off of it, those sorts of things.
Yeah. It's struggling to come back for a friend, not for Andrew. It's for his friend.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's
to relay
right.
this to.
Well, and, you know, the keeping the friend's kids off it's been the hard part, especially because those kids are young and don't want to listen. But even with that, and I think this might have actually, you know, accelerated some of those problems, is I think you might have told this friend of mine earlier this spring, is, you know, also when you're looking at doing, you know, your fertilizing, things like that, be patient and really look at, you know, the amount of spread and maybe not overdo it, because you can put your lawn in the same situation Rick's going to be in as a Bears fan in a little bit, and just kind of a shock.
Yes, yes, very much so.
Yes, you don't want to shock your yard, just like all those Bears fans out there. So, yeah, when you fertilize, I think you're referencing, we want to be sure and just put that on at a nice light rate. A lot of folks just put on that fertilizer too heavy, and it can cause some of that burn to happen, some of that shock to happen. And, you know, from a winter kill perspective, if you are putting on too much fertilizer, say in October, November, you can actually do the same thing. You can burn it, but you don't see the results of that burn until the next year.
And that kind of leads me here to that, you know, being a good time of year to actually be thinking about what I want the lawn to look like next year. And, you know, possibly if I have a spot that, yes, you park in the same spot, you walk across that, you get that winter kill because of the high traffic, I might want to start thinking about, you know, maybe that shouldn't be a grassy area, right? That's some of that planning that I should be doing that could even actually happen for the fall and winter landscape season. I don't have to wait till spring for that to be done, right?
Absolutely, yes. Yeah. So there's still time to get some projects done here in the nice weather over the next couple of months as we wrap up this season. But yeah, certainly thinking about kind of just the different design elements in your yard. So, you know, say you're out enjoying your yard and, you know, you're looking at that front yard area that you've been thinking about all year. You've been thinking about doing something, and now you're like, all right, honey, we're going to do something. So, you know, start the planning process, right? This is where you can start kicking around some different ideas. And some of the questions when we do a design consult with somebody that we like to go through and ask as we get into kind of this planning idea and this design, landscape design with folks is, how are you going to use the space? Is this a front yard? Is this a backyard? Are you going to park, you know, close to the space and walk across it? Well, we need some sort of path, right, if we're going to walk across it. If it's a backyard, how are we planning on using it? Do we love to entertain 4 people or 40 people? Big difference from a design perspective of how many people we're welcoming into our backyard. You know, do we want a space that we can sit out 6, 7, 8 months of the year? Well, we probably want some sort of fire pit or some sort of heater to help incorporate the spring and fall as we get into some of these cool nights that are coming. Maybe we have a really beautiful view of Pikes Peak and we're like, hey, we want to make sure we maintain that view, but we also don't have any trees. And so how do we maintain the view while we also get some trees going? And so, you know, the strategic placement of trees. Maybe we have a neighbor's window that we want to screen. There's some really specific plant material that would work really well for some of those things. So as we start this idea of planning, you know, I always tell people go out in the space and just kind of imagine in your mind what it might look like. And for some people, you know, maybe jump online and you Google landscape ideas, or you go to our website, fisklandscapes.com, and you look through a lot of our photos that are there and you say, hey, I really like this, or I really want a big stamped concrete patio like this. You know, this is where you can start this idea generation, right? Of like, I like this, I like this. And you start just kind of making a little list, right? And then, you know, as you either decide to do it yourself or you want to start meeting with some professionals, you know, you can give us a call, give other landscaping companies a call. We always recommend if you are going with a professional, do a little bit of research online about those folks. You know, we want people out there who are professionals, who know what they're doing, who are going to stand behind their work from a warranty perspective. You know, so check them out on Better Business Bureau, check them out on Google, all those important things as you get ready to hire a contractor. And set up some of those initial consult meetings, right? Whether that's with us or with other professionals out there. Get a couple people to come out, and that will kind of help the education piece for you, as well as, you know, do you like the person you're working with? You know, as you as you jump into a landscape agreement with somebody, maybe you're spending, you know, $50,000, $100,000 on a landscape install. You're going to be working with that contractor for a while, you know, and so they're going to be around your place potentially, you know, it could be 6-7 months by the time you start the planning phase, and then you get on the schedule, and then the crew is out there, and then final walkthrough, you know, that whole process can take 6 months. And so, you know, you want somebody out there who you're like, hey, I enjoy this company. I enjoy this person, the estimator, designer that I'm working with, and the crew of guys, and all of those things I think are important, as well as we talk about just the idea of, hey, how do we start this process? It seems like a lot to bite off for a lot of people, and they're just like, I don't even know where to start. And so I just like to always recommend, hey, start, just make a little list of some things that are important to you. Think about your budget, right? As this is a money show, you want to start putting some money away for your landscaping, because it's going to cost some dollars.
Right.
And so, you know, maybe you decide, hey, I can't afford it this fall, but what we're going to start doing is we're going to start taking, you know, however much per month, and we're going to start putting that into a special savings account, so that come next May, boom, we're ready to pay for this thing in cash, and we've saved up now over the course of, you know, 7, 8, 9 months to pay for this landscaping.
Yeah, and one of those other things as well, kind of as folks are thinking through and maybe trying to do a little bit of that back of the envelope type planning, especially in, well, I would guess probably most neighborhoods, but especially those that have been built in the last probably 10 to 15 years in the Colorado Springs area, is they need to look at their HOA covenants as well, right?
Absolutely. Yeah, we deal a lot with HOA guidelines, and you know, all the different HOAs out there have some different requirements in terms of the number of trees and shrubs and all the different things that you can and can't do. And so this is where you have to have a landscape plan. You got to submit the landscape plan, get that approved, right? So that's a whole process as well that we walk folks through. So yeah, absolutely help here to, you know, help with any of those kind of questions with customers as you work through those HOA, you know, requirements. And then what some folks also don't understand is that just to hit the HOA requirements cost quite a few dollars as well. And so, you know, as we talk about this idea of budgeting, a question that we often get asked, you know, pretty quickly, even on the phone, is how much does my landscaping cost? And it's like, well, it can cost a little or it can cost a lot. And so, you know, a rough guide that we use is looking at 5-10% of your home purchase price is what you should invest into your landscaping. So, you know, again, that's a general guide. So there's definitely situations where you're going to spend a lot more as you want more features. And there's situations where you can maybe spend a little bit less. But just as, you know, you start to do that math in your head, you know, if you spend $1 million on your house, you spend 10% of that, you're going to spend $100,000 on your landscape install. So again, just a rough idea to, as people are listening to this and thinking about, hey, what number should I budget for my landscape?
Yeah. And that's something as well as to, you know, kind of work with those experts and those designers, because I know a lot of those HOA guidelines, their list of approved plants really just seems like anything really available, but you don't really know what's actually going to work well in this climate, and it's probably gathered from some consulting firm somewhere not based here in the Front Range.
Yes.
So
yep.
When you have 8,000 different choices of shrubs, that's right, where an expert can come in and say, yeah, you could do any of these, but you want to succeed, this is what's actually going to work here.
Right, exactly. And that's a great point because we're working with these shrubs all the time, and so we know what shrubs are going to survive at 7,000 feet versus the shrubs that are going to, you know, survive at maybe 6,000 or even a little bit lower as you look at downtown Colorado Springs. So, you know, if you're on the Palmer Divide, you're at 7,400 feet. And your plant list there is going to be different and a shorter plant list than what you can do in some other areas in Colorado Springs. And then, yeah, as you look at some other plans from architects, maybe even in Fort Collins, for example, what they're going to recommend is going to be a little bit different than what we would recommend down here, even in just some of your varieties of grasses or your varieties of shrubs. And so I think it's important to work with a local landscaper who really understands the area. And, you know, they're generally working with local nurseries as well. You can go into Home Depot. and it can be hit or miss. I mean, you can find things that are very drought resistant there sometimes, and then other times, you know, you can find stuff that just doesn't belong in the Colorado scape. And so, you know, I think working with a local nursery around it is really good as well. And they can help bring that education. So let's say you're going to do it yourself, Andrew. Mm-hmm. Go down to a local nursery, ask questions, right? And you can kind of help learn what some of those shrubs are that are going to do well if you happen to be doing it yourself. But if you're working with a professional, they absolutely should be able to recommend some really good shrubs that are going to do well in your elevation, you know, kind of in whatever zone you're in, as well as the different, you know, shade versus sun and your type of soil. And then what are you using the shrubs for? Are you screening? Do you want color? All the, you know, we look at year-round things as well. And so we want stuff in your yard that's going to give you spring color, summer color, fall, you know, color and interest, and some winter interest as well. So a lot of things to take into consideration when you are putting together a design.
And one of those things that I know from having talked multiple times with you, and I try to hit every time that you're on here, one of those shrubs that is not on the recommended list, Ben, stuff we see all over the Colorado Springs, El Paso County area. That's the juniper.
The juniper, yes. Not a shrub that we use very often anymore, Rick. And it was used a lot in the 70s and 80s, a lot in Rockerman and Village 7 and a lot of different areas. We end up tearing out a lot more junipers than we install. There are a couple good uses for junipers, just in case anybody listening is a juniper fan, right? To stabilize a hill, works really, really well, you know, something that's going to grow and help stabilize, you know, a severe hill. And then some of your upright junipers also do have a nice place to give you some screening as well. So just to not bash on them too hard.
I just remember, you know, having lived in Woodmore for a few years, living on the north end of town here now, that most of the FireWise folks mm-hmm. refer to those as in-ground torches.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. From a fire perspective, you do not want those junipers, so definitely get those out of there, because as a fire comes through, those things are absolutely matchsticks and not good from a FireWise perspective.
Yeah, and so, you know, Ben, you kind of mentioned this, that was kind of the bigger trend in the 70s, things like that. You saw a lot of that. What are we looking at now as far as, you know, into this year, even planning for next year? What are some of the big things that you're seeing nowadays that people should be looking towards instead of, you know, kind of what has been done in the past?
Sure, absolutely. So, you know, one trend just from since we're on plants, and we'll talk about some a few other things too, but from a planting perspective, what we see is a lot of those drought resistant plants. And so a lot of your ornamental grasses, your Russian sages, your meadow sages, your, you know, your salvias, your agastacheas, you know, all of those things we're seeing a lot more. And those just weren't available and around in the 70s and 80s. Mm-hmm. And so we're definitely seeing a different plant palette now than what we had seen in years past. Yeah, and then just other trends from a landscaping perspective, seeing a lot of outdoor living. People want to spend more time outside. We live in beautiful Colorado, and so one of the big trends is how do we take the inside outside? And so these are things like patio space, things like outdoor kitchens, grills, pizza ovens, pergolas, gazebos, covered patios, decks, fire pits, fireplaces, kind of creating spaces and places where people can love to come home to. And, you know, they get home from work, it's 5:30, and it's still really nice for a couple hours. So we're seeing just a lot of folks who are interested in kind of bringing the inside outside. And then one of the other big trends that we've continued to see really over the last couple of years is artificial turf. And Rick, you're not going to believe this, but I actually just put in artificial turf at my house. I have a 30x60 area now.
So is that for taking infield practice or what?
It is. It's for my son's soccer. We'll go with that.
Okay. I'm acceptable.
I'm a big real grass person. I love me some real grass and the smell of it, the feel of it, right? And so there is still nothing quite like it, but artificial grass is a good replacement in some scenarios. And, you know, as we're talking about trends, it definitely is a trend that we've seen in the landscape industry for a couple of reasons. One, the quality of the artificial turf has come way up. The stuff I just put in my yard actually looks pretty realistic. And it's, you know, it's definitely a lot better than the green carpet that they used to sell a few years back. So looks pretty realistic. And then also, you know, from a water perspective, it definitely is a good way to save water. And so we're not having to dump any water onto it. And so as we continue to talk about water savings in Colorado, that's something that's going to continue to be talked about in the next 5 or 10 years in Colorado specifically. There's just not enough water. And so this whole idea of what are we going to do as we continue to run out of water here in the West, there's been a lot of conversation around the Colorado River Basin that impacts us in Colorado Springs, that impacts, you know, Denver and the Front Range. So there's a lot of conversations going on at the state level about that in terms of water. And so the idea of artificial turf is that it does allow us to use less water on our landscapes.
And that's actually one of those things on that sort of outdoor living or yard maintenance that I was actually going to bring up. You know, the probably now 10, 12 years ago, one of my neighbors had installed around some trees, some artificial turf, and it really did look like the painted carpet that you used to see at the football stadiums that people were playing on.
Uh-huh.
But we've now had neighbors in the last couple of years that basically took up all of the grass from their backyard, xeriscaped it, and that's Xeri, X-E-R-I, not zero, all right?
You've learned something over the years.
Yes, xeriscaped. With that, they've got a variety of different rock colors and patterns, but they've also put out that little space, it's probably, you know, in that 30 by 60 area of that non-natural grass, I will call it. But it does actually look pretty close to grass. They get the right colors in there. It's not the whole lime green looking stuff anymore.
It even has a little bit of the brown thatch now, the latest stuff in my house. If you look at it real close, it actually has a little bit of brown in the bottom of it to help it look more realistic.
So as a neighbor, I can say I appreciate not looking out at a rug.
Yes.
I can absolutely say that. Now you guys are going here in about a week to a conference, to a national conference coming up. Why are you taking time out of the Fisk Lawnscapes schedule to go to something like that?
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, I love being a leader here in Colorado Springs in the landscaping industry. And so in order just to continue to grow, our skills and training and networking, we're going down to Dallas to the NALP, National Association of Landscape Professionals, kind of main conference for the year. And, there'll be some training sessions down there and some opportunities to meet up with some other folks. Really just to continue to sharpen our skills as a company. And so, you know, taking several other team members with me down to that. And as I sit on our state board here in Colorado, again, just wanting to continue to be a voice in the landscaping industry. I'm a board member up there, and a lot of the conversations that we're having, you know, are around, some of the bills that are coming through, mm-hmm. and the water conversations and the drought task force that's going on. And so, just being a part of that larger conversation, whether that's, here or in Denver or down in Dallas, just continuing to be a leader, as Fisk Lawnscapes continues to grow here in Colorado Springs, just continuing to be a leader, a voice here for the landscaping industry.
Awesome. Now, with that, I know comes a lot of responsibility, right? You talk about sitting on boards. When it comes to that Colorado board that you're part of, you basically, it's like you are the representation for Southern Colorado on there, because they like to do a lot of Denver stuff, right? and you get to be our voice.
Well, there is also some other Southern chapter representation here in town as well. But yeah, the Associated Landscape Contractors of Colorado, fantastic organization based out of Denver. But we do serve the entire state of Colorado. And, we're looking at the issues that are facing the landscape industry, try to stay ahead of some of those things, provide communications, provide a bunch of resources, training for sustainable landscape management, networking, tons of other trainings that happen. And again, some of those trainings are happening in Northern Colorado, and in Denver and in Southern Colorado and on the Western Slope. And so, you know, we do try to represent kind of the entire state, but just a fantastic organization. And, you know, for the average listener out there who are like, oh, I don't really care too much about this, there are some good resources as well on the ALCC website, ALCC.com. You can find a landscape professional there. So say, you know, you live in a different area and you're looking for a landscape professional other than Fisk Lawnscapes, you can go there and check that out. They also have just some other resources there, you know, photos that can kind of, again, spur some of those ideas on. But feel free to check out their website and, you know, just a fantastic state organization there.
Awesome. Now, one final question as we are kind of wrapping all of these pieces up here. And I know that, you know, KRDO has a fairly wide listener area, basically southeastern Colorado, for all intents and purposes. Where does Fisk Lawnscapes do their work?
Yeah, so we, you know, we work mainly in the Colorado Springs area, so kind of the Monument area, kind of down through Broadmoor, kind of that sphere of our state. You know, it's hard to serve more people, just because then there's lots of windshield time for our teams. And we've got some great teams, and also this year we were voted best place to work at in the landscaping industry. We were number 24 in the nation, and so that was a pretty cool nationwide honor. But yeah, you know, in terms of the clients that we're serving, you know, all up and down kind of the Colorado Springs, Monument, Black Forest, you know, regions kind of out as far east, I mean, Peyton kind of area and Rock Rimmon and a lot of those areas.
So not Burlington though.
Not Burlington. Nope. Not quite far east as Burlington. So yeah.
Yet.
That's right. Yet.
Till they get that eastern yard built out that way. Awesome. Well, Ben, if folks have questions, if they want to sit down and maybe start brainstorming through things either for the fall or the spring, or if they just want to figure out, you know, is this something that's even possible to do in my yard? How do they get in touch with you guys over at Fisk Lawnscapes?
Absolutely. Yeah, so super easy. If you want to go to our website at fisklawnscapes.com. Again, that's Fisk, F-I-S-K, lawnscapes.com. There's a form that you can fill out there, and somebody will get back in touch with you. Or if you'd rather a phone call and you want to call into our office, you can do that at 719-495-6300. Again, 719-495-6300. And yeah, we're happy to come out and provide kind of that free initial, you know, consultation and kind of come out, see what you need, provide a quote for you, talk through design ideas with you. And that's really a great first step. As if you're thinking about a project, have us come out. We can kind of talk through some different ideas for you, kind of talk about budget, kind of see what you want us to design for you. And then we can kind of get the process started from there, whether it's for this fall or even, you know, as you start looking at next spring, because by the time we get to next spring, we'll have already booked next spring. And so if you are thinking next year, now's a great time to start getting in contact with us and we can start having that conversation.
Awesome. Well, Andrew, I think I got all of my questions answered. Yeah. Did your friend get all of his answers?
Yes. Hopefully that friend's wife was listening.
Okay. Well. Okay. That's perfect. Well, folks, that is all the time that we have for this edition of Money Matters. Hopefully, you got your questions answered in there as well. If you do have other questions, other things that you would like to have answered, and you missed what Ben had given out as their contact info, you can feel free to contact me, 719-500-8700. I can actually get you their contact information as well. That is all the time that we have for this week on Money Matters, but we will be back again next week. We will be continuing to talk about your money because your money matters. Thanks for tuning in, everybody.